Welcome to Akhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI. So today we're diving deep into a really fantastic novel, Charmaine Wilkerson's Black Cake. It made quite a splash back in 2022.
Oh, absolutely. A New York Times bestseller right out of the gate. You couldn't really miss it. It definitely cemented itself as a key piece of modern Caribbean diaspora literature.
And when you look into Wilkerson's background, it makes so much sense, doesn't it? Born in Jamaica, grew up in the U.S., Italy. Mm-hmm. She worked as a journalist internationally.
Exactly. You can feel that lived experience woven into the story, that sort of nuanced understanding of diaspora, of identity, and, well, all those complicated threads that hold families together or sometimes pull them apart.
Right. She's not just telling one family's story here. It feels much bigger, using that family saga structure to get at these global themes. So our goal today, for you listening, is to really unpack this. Go beyond just the plot points.
Yeah, look at how she built it, the symbols she uses.
And the really tough questions it asks about our own families. You know, we want to get into that central idea, how a dying wish, a really unusual one, completely upends a family's understanding of itself and forces them to rebuild on, well, some difficult truths.
And the story kicks off in a way that feels familiar, at least at first. We're in contemporary California. Eleanor Bennett, the matriarch, has just passed away.
But what she leaves behind is, well, it's definitely not your typical inheritance. It's quite strange, actually, for her two adult children, Byron and Benny. And they're estranged, which adds another layer right away.
It really does. They get this 8-hour-long audio recording. Think about that, 8 hours of their mother talking.
It's intense, a full-on confession, basically. And alongside that, a single Caribbean black cake. Traditional, preserved, sitting in the freezer.
With these very specific, almost storybook instructions.
Right.
You have to listen to the whole tape together, and then you need to find this woman, Mabel Martin, who they've never heard of, and share the cake with her, but only when the time is right.
Talk about a hook. It's brilliant.
It is. And the immediate effect, maybe ironically, isn't unity. It forces Byron and Benny together, sure, but there's so much friction there already.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about them.
Well, Byron, he's the picture of success, right? A respected oceanographer, very controlled, maybe a bit rigid, always the one who did what Eleanor expected.
The good son.
Kinda, yeah. And then there's Benny. She's the artist, more free-spirited. She actually left the family orbit about 8 years before, partly because they couldn't accept her bisexuality or her, you know, less conventional career path as a voiceover artist.
So this recording essentially traps these two grieving, angry siblings in a room together. Forced listening.
And that choice of medium, the audio recording, is so clever, isn't it? Wilkerson didn't choose a diary or letters.
No, it's passive for them. They have to listen. They can't argue back. They can't interrupt. They can't just skim it. They're forced to absorb their mother's voice, her story.
And what a story it is. The core shock is finding out that the mother they knew, Eleanor Bennett, well, her entire life, as they understood it, was basically a fabrication. Yeah. It immediately throws this fundamental question at the characters and at you, the reader. How well do we really know the people closest to us, especially our parents?
Is that stability we rely on built on truth or something else? What if the ground beneath your feet just dissolves?
Exactly. That's the quicksand feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So the recording takes us and them back in time, back to this hidden history.
We go to the Caribbean in the 1960s.
Very different world.
Very different. And we meet the young woman Eleanor used to be, Cubby Lincook.
And what was she like?
Full of life, full of promise, a really gifted swimmer, apparently had dreams of competing internationally. Just this bright spark.
But something happens.
Something tragic, yeah. Her future is essentially stolen from her. Her father, see, he had serious gambling debts, huge ones. And to clear them, he promises Cubby in marriage to this pretty violent local gangster known as Little Man Sterling.
So her dreams are just gone, traded away.
Extinguished. Just like that. It's brutal. And it speaks volumes about the lack of agency for women, particularly in that time and place. The story then takes this incredibly dramatic turn, right, at the wedding reception itself.
Yes. Sterling, the groom, suddenly collapses. He dies. And the suspicion immediately falls on Covey. Poisoning is the rumor, maybe even from the wedding cake itself.
And given who Sterling was and the likely justice system she'd face.
She knows she stands no chance. She'd be blamed, locked up, or worse. So she makes this incredibly desperate choice.
What does she do?
She runs. Runs straight to the sea, the place she loved, where she was strong. She swims out into the darkness, fakes her own drowning, fakes her own death.
Wow. She literally sheds her entire identity.
Everything. Her name, her home, her history, her future as Covey. It's the ultimate act of self-preservation, but also the ultimate sacrifice. Covey Lingcook has to die so that someone else can live.
And that someone else becomes Eleanor Bennett.
Yeah.
That transition from Covey to Eleanor, it's really the heart of the novel's exploration of identity, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a transformation born of trauma and necessity, not a choice made lightly. Imagine arriving in London, as she does, essentially as a ghost. Undocumented, terrified, living constantly in the shadows.
It's survival, but it's such a cost.
A tremendous cost. But London is also where she has this brief, bittersweet reunion. She runs into Clarence Chin, or Gibbs, who was her sweetheart back home before everything fell apart.
A little bit of hope.
A flicker. They reconnect, find some happiness, and Eleanor actually becomes pregnant. But that past, the danger, it hangs over everything. The fear of being found out is immense.
And this leads her to make another incredibly difficult decision. Maybe the hardest one.
I think so. It's probably the novel's deepest, most painful secret. Eleanor, desperate to protect herself and believing a child would make her traceable, vulnerable, she gives the baby girl up for adoption.
Oh, that's devastating.
It truly is. An agonizing choice driven entirely by fear and a skewed sense of protection. It shapes so much of who she becomes.
And shortly after that?
She meets Bertram Bennett. Bert. The man Byron and Benny know as their father. And the crucial thing here is she tells him everything. Her real name, her past, the fake death, the danger.
And he accepts it.
He accepts all of it. Promises to protect her, helps her build this new, seemingly stable life in America. He becomes her anchor, her shield.
That decision to give up her daughter. It makes sense of that quote you mentioned earlier. Some stories are too dangerous to tell while people are still living.
But too important to take to the grave.
Exactly. Her silence, her secrecy, it wasn't malicious. It was a shield built out of trauma.
And understanding that sheds so much light on how she parented Byron and Benny, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. Suddenly her guardedness, her almost smothering insistence on Byron following a conventional safe path.
The successful oceanographer.
Right. And her really harsh rejection of Benny's art, her lifestyle, her sexuality. It wasn't just disapproval, you see. It was terror.
Terror that any deviation, anything that drew attention, could somehow lead back to Covey Lingcook. To exposure. To disaster. Exactly. That deep, hidden fear is what ultimately caused the massive rift with Benny. 8 years of silence, built on a secret Benny couldn't even comprehend.
Until now. Yeah. Until the recording. Which starts to act as this catalyst for understanding, maybe even forgiveness.
Yes, that's the turning point in the present day. As Byron and Benny listen, hour after hour, you see their perspective shift. They start moving from anger and judgment towards, well, a devastating kind of empathy.
Realizing their mother wasn't judging them so much as trying to protect them from ghosts only she could see.
Precisely. And that shift allows them to start bridging the gap between themselves, too. Their shared listening becomes a shared path toward reconciliation.
And the tape also gives them clues, right? Leads them toward this mysterious Mabel Martin.
It does. Their investigation, piecing together the fragments from the recording, eventually points them towards a woman named Mabel Martin, who is publicly known as Marble. She's actually quite famous.
And what?
A celebrated food expert, an author, a TV personality, specializing in, of all things, culinary history and heritage foods.
The irony.
It's beautifully woven in, and the final piece clicks into place.
Marble is.
Marble is their half-sister. The baby girl Eleanor gave up for adoption all those years ago in London.
Wow. So Eleanor knew.
She knew. The novel reveals she'd secretly followed Marble's life from afar, watched her grow up, celebrated her successes anonymously, never daring to make contact, but always watching.
So the climax isn't some big confrontation, then?
No, it's quieter, more profound. It culminates with the three siblings, Byron, Benny, and Marble, finally meeting, and they share the black cake.
The cake she left.
The very same cake. That act of sharing it, eating it together, it's like communion. It's accepting all the broken pieces, all three of their intertwined, fragmented timelines, and bringing them together into something new, something more honest.
Which brings us right back to the cake itself. It's clearly more than just a cake.
Oh, far more. It's the central symbol, isn't it? The most potent one in the book. Think about what black cake is.
Rich, dark, full of fruit, soaked in rum and brandy. Sometimes for months, even years.
Exactly. It's a preserved food. It literally holds time within it, just like Eleanor's preserved history, held silent for decades.
And the ingredients themselves.
Yeah.
They tell the story of migration, don't they? Spices, fruits, rum. That's the history of the Caribbean, of trade routes, of cultural mixing.
It's a map in a cake pan. A map of their family's migrations, their history. It carries the sweetness of heritage, yes, but also that dark, complex, almost bitter undertone from the molasses, the rum, the secrets.
So eating the cake isn't just consumption. It's about acknowledging and integrating that history.
Result.
Living it, understanding it, sharing it.
Right. It perfectly captures that diaspora experience, how even when people scatter certain traditions, tastes, smells, they remain this incredibly powerful, durable link back home. Back to the origin story.
So let's pull back a bit and look at the big themes Wilkerson is exploring here. Beyond the plot, what are the core takeaways? Identity seems huge.
Definitely. Identity and performance. There's that line you mentioned earlier. We all carry more than one person inside us. The question is which one we choose to show the world.
And Covey literally had to choose. She performed Eleanor for decades.
But what's fascinating is how Wilkerson shows that it wasn't just a performance. Yes, she changed her name, her circumstances, but core parts of Covey, her resilience, her fierce protective instinct, maybe even her connection to the water through Byron, they persisted. Identity is fluid, layered.
And then there's reconciliation.
Yeah.
Forgiveness. It's not portrayed as easy, is it?
Not at all. The novel suggests forgiveness isn't about forgetting or excusing. It's about reaching a deeper, more complex understanding. Byron and Benny have to forgive their mother's silence, her deception. And in doing that, they heal the rift between themselves, too.
It requires seeing her not just as mom, but as Covey Lincook, a young, terrified woman making impossible choices.
Which connects to that theme of historical trauma and resilience. The story is deeply rooted in the specific traumas of migration, of potentially being undocumented, of racism, of economic vulnerability. But it's also a celebration of human strength, the ability to adapt, to build a life even after everything's been taken away.
I think the real emotional punch comes from that universal experience, doesn't it? Realizing our parents had whole lives, struggles, heartbreaks, before we ever existed. Lives we might know nothing about.
Exactly. Black cake just peels back those layers so effectively. It forces you to see the complex human being behind the parental role. It fosters this real sense of compassion for the sacrifices, the hidden battles of the generations before us.
It really is a powerful reminder that knowing where we come from, the whole messy, complicated story, is so vital to understanding who we are now.
The true legacy isn't always the neat, tidy story we're told. Sometimes it's the resilience shown in surviving the untold story.
That makes you think, doesn't it?
Mm.
The black cake is such a potent symbol of that bittersweet legacy. It prompts the question for all of us, I think. What's the black cake in our own families?
Mm. What's that rich, complex, maybe even slightly bitter story or tradition that's waiting to be understood, to be shared, to make us whole?
A really thought-provoking place to leave it. Understanding our origins to understand ourselves. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.